The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Last week, the UK Supreme Court ruled in a landmark judgment that a woman is defined by biological sex under equalities legislation. However, Labour ministers and MPs will meet this week to discuss how to promote trans rights in the wake of that judgment. And it comes as thousands of campaigners protested against the ruling in London over the weekend. We are joined by Lucy Fisher, Whitehall editor of the Financial Times and host of the Financial Times Political Fix podcast, to get the latest. Lucy, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, let's talk about that ruling, first of all. Were people surprised by the ruling?
Well, look, I think certainly people who campaign on the primacy of sex-based rights very much welcomed it. People who campaign on behalf of trans rights were very disappointed. I think people weren't, in truth, quite sure which way it would go. But I think it's fair to say that had the judgment gone the other way and prioritised a gender definition of sex for inequalities legislation, that would have been a bigger upheaval, perhaps, for the government. It would have required potentially amending the Equality Act. So this is the slightly less unexpected outcome, but it's certainly been very controversial with some quarters of society.
Now, the question of gender and sex is often confusing for people. Biological sex is born a man or a woman. Gender is how that person may feel what they are, be it a woman or a man.
Well, that's exactly right. And what this judgment has come down on the side of is to say that for the purposes of equality legislation, which, you know, governs single-sex sports clubs, you know, prison wings, hospital wards, changing rooms, lavatories, that sex refers to biological sex, of which there are only two, you know, man or woman, and that is the sex you are born and you are not able to change. Gender, you know, and gender reassignment, people gaining gender recognition certificates where they wish to be known as another gender, that will not apply in terms of equalities legislation. So there's still quite a lot to be cleared up now about what exactly that will mean for businesses in terms of the lavatory provisions they offer to the public and so forth. So in some ways, there's still quite a lot of work for the equalities watchdog to do in setting out fresh guidance for people.
The lavatory issue may be an easier one to solve than people might imagine, because any of us who take an aircraft or a train will use a unisex toilet routinely.
Well, that's true. It may lead to a higher provision of unisex facilities. There's already been some warnings from disabilities groups that, you know, people shouldn't consider, you know, the often one sole disabled loo to be, you know, a third space, you know, just as a default out of respect for disabled people and their need to use facilities. So you can see some controversy ahead as people wrangle with this. And of course, you know, many women may not feel happy with a wider spread use of shared provisions with men, including some feminists. So you say it might be easier, but like many of these issues on this subject, there tends to be quite a lot of knotty sub-topics when you look into it.
Whatever about trains, certainly in planes when you're travelling, I mean, there is effectively a concierge looking after those loos in the form of the air crew.
Well, that's right, and that wouldn't be the case in all these scenarios. I think, you know, there's also a big political issue here, particularly for the Labour Party, which has, you know, an umbrella coalition that spans a much wider array of opinion and very fiercely held conflicting opinions within its ranks. In one sense, it's slightly easier for the Conservatives and Reform UK, where they have been more routinely across the board pro a biological sex interpretation when it comes to the definition of what a woman and what a man is. I think for Labour, you know, we remember before the general election how much Keir Starmer squirmed when he was asked, you know, can a woman have a penis, how much he tried to avoid the subject and had to revise his position several times. It's not surprising to me that over the sort of the Easter bank holiday weekend, we've heard very, very little from the government about this ruling. You know, I think it's going to be a difficult week ahead for Labour politicians to answer questions about their personal views on it.
Now, there is an issue which I'm not sure in the fine print of the Supreme Court's judgment was addressed, and that's the question of whether, you know, someone who's born hermaphroditic and therefore it generally doctors will make a decision at that time, if it is well diagnosed, as to which gender or which sex, rather, they will prescribe for that individual to live. And I'm not sure how the judgment feeds into that situation, rare though it might be.
Well, look, I think it is rare, but it is important to anyone in that situation. And I think that is something that the Equalities Watchdog is going to have to look into a little more. I think it also speaks to a wider issue, which is what sort of pro-trans rights campaigners argue, which is that actually, you know, there is a wider spectrum biologically than just, you know, XX chromosome women and XY chromosome men. There are, you know, a raft of, albeit rare, you know, intersex people or people with sort of unusual combinations of chromosomes that don't fit the very binary pattern that this Supreme Court ruling speaks to. But I think by and large, those are quite niche issues, and it's the more mainstream issues that is going to cause this government a headache in the months ahead.
Now, do we understand, I mean, this is a victory for those women in Scotland who took the action and ultimately ended up in the Supreme Court in London. But the question of overreach by the Scottish government at the time in terms of allowing self-declaration rather than, you know, an agreed diagnosis.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that there was a sense that, for starters, that the Scottish government was, making legislation on something that is a reserved matter, that, you know, is held, a portfolio that's held by Westminster rather than the devolved Holyrood administration. As you say, you know, for those campaigners, triumphant at last week's judgment.
Even though they were warned against triumphalism by the judges.
Oh, well, look, it's been such a bitterly fought a debate, and there has been so much abuse flung on by both sides against the other, or many quarters of each side against the other, that, you know, it wasn't a surprise to see, you know, people who've campaigned long for this, you know, celebrating what they viewed as a victory for common sense. And in particular, you know, in Scotland, you've had very egregious examples to many people's minds of, for example, a male rapist of women being able to change gender and therefore be placed in a women's prison at risk to other women, as those campaigners argued. So this went far beyond the issue of the use of lavatories and changing rooms, and was viewed as a matter of public safety and going against common sense by those who led that campaign in Scotland.
And equally terrifying would be for a trans woman to be consigned to a male prison because of the biological status she had at birth, being male, and then thrown into a male prison because of that status, given that she is now a trans woman. The danger in which she would be placed would be unconscionable.
Well, exactly. There's no easy answers to many of these issues. And I think that's why a lot of the questions now are about whether there will have to be third spaces for trans people, particularly trans women, who could come under, you know, attack if they were placed in male facilities. You know, could be at high risk of self-harm, other sort of psychological trauma. So it throws up a lot of questions, this verdict. It's by no means the end of the matter.
And the nature of the protest, by and large, peaceful over the weekend?
Peaceful, but a lot of vandalism of statues, including the sort of suffragette campaigner Millicent Fawcett, of Nelson Mandela, anti-apartheid campaigner Robert Peel. You know, there was I think it has raised eyebrows, some of the activities of the protests that have taken place in central London. And they don't show much sign of abating. We're expecting another wave of protests in the coming weeks.
Lucy Fisher, Whitehall editor at the Financial Times and host of the FT's Political Fix podcast. Lucy, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. Now, lots of texts coming in on the subject of downsizing or right-sizing. Perhaps the government landlords should lead the way and sell some of their properties at affordable prices to hard-pressed young families. Practice what you preach, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, says Jim. I'm a 60-year-old widow, would be interested in downsizing, but I want to own whatever I downsize to, not interested in paying rent. Are there any schemes out there that can help with this? Not so far. Our granny fat's the best we can do in 2025. In Australia, they have over 55s only quality apartments and gradual stages of care community homes that older people can buy. We should plan this better. I live alone in a house that's too big for me. If I downsized after fees and taxes, I'd make a small profit that would likely end up going to Fair Deal or in capital gains tax by my children. So why bother? That's from Dahi. Lots of couples with zero or one kids living in four-bed houses. Trust me, there are no spare or unused rooms, including the attic for storage. That's according to Lara in Dublin. As a couple, we would love to downsize, but developers are not building bungalows, which is what we would want, a decent size, not one, not a box within walking distance, etc. They don't exist. All new estates are two-story semi-Ds, not suitable for older folk, says Chris. Why would you move from a home with space and possibly peace and quiet into a box, relying on lifts or stairs where you can hear your neighbours fart? We don't build suitable retirement homes, says John in Dublin. There's something very sinister and patronising about the term right-sizing. It may be voluntary now, but it would gradually become more coercive, especially under a left-wing government. That's according to Ed. All right, still to come on the programme.
You know, what a big surprise that a bunch of a few leakers get fired and suddenly a bunch of hit pieces come out.
Pete Hegseth back in hot water over new Signal chats, and he's not too happy. We'll get the full story.
It is exceedingly hard to predict how more than 130 cardinal electors might coalesce around a single future leader.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.